Good morning, Gainesville, Ocala. We've lost our native son, Tom Petty. This is Jeffrey Meldon with a special edition of Law Talk Live, devoted to Tom Petty, who brought more fame to Gainesville, Florida than any one before or since. Unfortunately, Tom died this past Monday, and we're going to do an entire show devoted to Tom Petty. I have a very special guest here, Barry Sides, who was with Tom at various times in his career, and we would like to just spend some money. We'd have a good time doing that. But we'd like to spend a few minutes just kind of going over things. But before we get into it, Marty Gerard wrote this great book, Music Everywhere, The Rock and Roll Roots of a Southern Town. And he really epitomized Tom Petty's roots in music and how he got started. And with your permission, I'm going to just read about a page and a half out of this book, because I think it'll give the proper setting for what Gainesville meant and what Tom, how Tom got involved in the music scene. Follow that dream. Tom Petty was among the many who were transfixed by the Beatles' performance on the Ed Sullivan Show, as Tom Petty commented in the documentary Running Down a Dream. It all became clear. This is what I'm going to do, and this is how you do it. Petty was already hooked on rock and roll, in part through his encounter with Elvis Presley 3 years earlier. Tommy's uncle, Earl, owned and operated Jernigan's Motion Picture Service, a business whose services included filming special events, parades, football games, and providing technical support for movies produced in and about Central Florida. When Mirisch Productions arrived in July of 61 to shoot several scenes for Elvis Presley's upcoming movie, Follow That Dream, Earl Jernigan invited his 11-year-old nephew, Tom Petty, along to meet Presley and watch the filming. As Petty recalled, a line of white Cadillacs pulled up to the movie site in Ocala as car doors opened and the passengers began exiting one by one. Elvis finally stepped out, recalls Petty, looking like nothing I'd ever seen before. After being introduced to Elvis and receiving a brief nod from the king, Tommy watched as Presley was forced to shoot one simple scene over another because of the large group of fans who broke through each time the filming began. Tom's neighbor and friend, Keith Harbin, had a sister who was an Elvis fan and just moved out of the house and was leaving behind her collection of Elvis Presley 45s. Petty traded his slingshot to Harbin for the box of records. And that was that. The music just hypnotized me, he recalls. The hook was in really deep. I'm in about the fifth grade, and I'm playing 1950 records, and it's all I want to talk about. Even the other kids thought I was weird. I didn't have the faintest dream of being a musician. I just loved to listen to it. It was the early Presley recordings that got Tommy all shook up. Songs such as Heartbreak Hotel, Jailhouse Rock, One Night, Hound Dog, Don't Be Cruel, all golden oldies by the mid-60s. What was a young boy to do? The answer, of course, was to start a band, an idea made abundantly clear a few years later with the success of the Beatles, four guys singing and playing in a group. The group approached was sort of new as an idea. Most early rock and roll acts were singers: Roy Orbison, Chuck Berry, Elvis, Fats Domino, Little Richard. If there was a band involved, they were usually second billed to the singer. Bill Haley and the Comets, Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps, Buddy Holly and the Crickets. A self-contained band performing their own songs and playing under a collective name such as the Beatles or the Kinks or the Who was a relative novelty as a musical entity. As Petty recalled, the minute I saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, it's true of a thousand guys, there was the way out. There was the way to do it. You get your friends and you're a self-contained unit, and you make the music, and it looked like so much fun. Tom Petty was only one of many Gainesville teens that watched the Beatles on TV that February night in 1964. But the difference between Petty was that he acted almost immediately. Within 24 hours, everything changed. I wanted a group. I set about scouring the neighborhood for anybody that owned instruments, that could play instruments. He located a few neighborhood kids with similar instruments who gathered at his house, plugged into the one guitar amplifier they had, chose a song they all knew, and began to play. This sound, he recalled, was the biggest rush of his life. They were making the music. Wow.
Yeah, man.
Ooh.
That's the start of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers and everything before and after it. I was a young new person to Gainesville in September of 1970, and I had just come into town, and a group of friends of mine got together, and we did a bunch of socially involved things. We started an organic food co-op, a free school. We wrote for the newspaper. We did a bunch of different stuff.
Made candles.
We were called the Candle People, okay? You know, there was Leon Kappelman. His nickname was Madman. And
you guys burned your candles at both ends, right?
We did. We partied all night and made the candles all day. And, you know, there was seven of us, and four or five lived out in the candle farm, which candles. Is the...
where they raise candles.
Well, it was just east of where Lincoln High School is. There was a riding stable on about 200 acres, and they had a dilapidated shack out there. And I think it was Marty Kappelman, he lived out there, and Chance.
The Wolf.
The Wolf, Chance lived out there, and there was Larry Newman, and there anyhow. So we got involved in all these things, and among them was the music scene. And Tom Petty was playing with a group called Mudcrutch. And at that time, they had Tommy Ledden. Now, Tommy Ledden's brother, Bernie Ledden, had already made it big, I think, in the Flying Burrito Brothers. Yeah. And, of course, he was a founding member of the Eagles. And the Ledden family were the best musicians around.
There's a wall in their home that's still here in Gainesville. They have one of the few basements in Gainesville. There's a wall with everybody's phone numbers written on them, where the telephone used to hang, where the kids would talk on the phone. And on that wall, it's Tommy Petty with his, you know, Donnie Felder, Stevie Stills, you know, from when they were kids. And that wall's still there with all these old phone numbers on it from all these rock people who became these huge stars that were just neighborhood kids back then. You know, amazing.
And the Leddens, there were, what, 9 of them or something?
I think there were 12 of them, I think. 11 or 12.
Well, Barry knew the all the Leddens. I knew a lot
I'm
of
the
them.
13th Ledden, yeah. Yeah, they've Barry's sort of adopted me. They have over the years.
But so you got Tom Petty and Tom Ledden, okay, who were already really good. And then Randall Marsh, they picked up as a drummer. And then this kid, you know, shows up playing guitar named Mike Campbell. And to this day, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers is one of the best bands in the world because of Mike Campbell.
And Benmont, sure.
And then Benmont joined later.
Right, of course.
Benmont came in a little later. Benmont Tench, whose father was, you know, Judge Benmont Tench, and I knew as a lawyer.
Best mustache in Gainesville he had.
Yeah. And they had, a lot of these families had been around Gainesville for, you know, for, you know, some from the 1800s. So you had this, you know, and everybody lived within a, you know, a couple miles of each other. I mean, you had 8 Rock and Roll Hall of Famers living in Gainesville, all
within 2 miles of each other.
Within 2 miles of each other, okay. You know, there was the two of the Eagles, Don Felder
and Bernie,
Ledden, okay. And then, you know, the Heartbreakers.
There's 5 of those.
5 of those. And
Steve Stills.
Steve Stills, right.
So, who still keeps a house here.
Yeah. And then, you know, Bo Diddley gets honors because he spent a lot of time here later on. So, and he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, Tom Petty, to talk about Tom Petty, you really have to understand his roots in Gainesville, which is a southern town, a college town, which allowed him to play a lot of music. And I think that was the kind of the driving force. I'm involved with the Candle people, and we're doing all these things. And all of a sudden, we came up with this idea. We had heard about Woodstock, and we had all gone to the Atlanta Pop Festival, you know, earlier in the year. So, so Tommy Petty and Ledden and myself and Mad Men, we all get together and we decide let's do
a show, a like show, Little Rascals.
An outdoor. We want to do a Woodstock, a friggin' festival. So. Here's the excerpt from the book, and then we're going to go to a break, but I just want you to listen to this. Why not throw a little festival yourself? Mudcrutch hosted outdoor festivals on several acres at the Mudcrutch Farm. It was right behind Dubs. Tom Ledden remembers this brief period at the end of 1970 and the start of the next year as homegrown events that attracted large crowds with several bands and free food by the Hogtown Food Co-op, an organization created by a group of community activists and hippie entrepreneurs recently arrived from Cleveland who called themselves the Candle People. Among them was Jeffrey Meldon, an attorney who became an effective conduit between the mainstream business community, local government, and a growing hippie population of Gainesville. Meldon approached several businesses for donations. Dan Riles of Riles Plumbing had scaffolding. So that's how we got the stage together, Meldon recalls. There was no fee to get in, but we went to Baskin Robbins and got empty ice cream containers and put them at the entrance. People put enough money in the buckets, so we said, next time, let's do a weekend event where people can put out sleeping bags and tents and just hang out. Two more festivals at the Mudcrutch Farm attracted even more attendees and more bands, and an unexpected visit from the landlord, Ledden recalls. We did the second one, and we did the third one about a month later, and the next day the landlady and her husband showed up and looked around the place, and we hadn't had time to clean up all the wine bottles and trash and everything and all that property. So they evicted us, and we moved out to Earlton on the west side of Lake Santa Fe, the four of us right on the lake. That was a good period of growth for us musically because we played all the time. And let's go to a break on Law Talk Live.
I was pulling out, and a woman ran a red light and T-boned me and completely spun me around. And made it very difficult to do my job. I play the guitar, I'm a musician. And the first guy I called was Jeffrey Meldon.
Barry was able to achieve an almost full recovery, and we were able to help him get fully compensated for the injuries that he had suffered.
My medical bills, he took care of everything. And when it was over, I had a new truck. So to have someone that you can turn to that will fight for your rights, I'd recommend him to anybody.
While we can't guarantee that you will obtain the same or similar results, we always fight for justice for our clients. If you've been injured, call Meldon Law. Although our main office is in Gainesville, we offer consultations in Ocala and are available to have in-person meetings with you anywhere else that accommodates your needs. 1-800-373-8000 or go to MeldonLaw.com. Meldon Law, where you matter most. She's so kind of
wonderful. Okay, we're back. I'm Jeffrey Meldon. This is Law Talk Live, and we have a special Tom Petty tribute edition of the show today. And my special guest is Barry Sides. Barry, I know you came into the Gainesville scene around, 76, 77?
As I was pulling in, Petty and them were pulling out for L.A.
Yeah.
No, seriously, it's about the timing of it. And I didn't meet them all until late 70s.
Tell us a little bit about your meetings and encounters with...
Well, really, my meetings was with Stan Lynch. Stan and I, Tommy's drummer, another Gainesville boy, great friend. We met and just became really fast friends. I had known Stan's father actually before Stan Sr., who was teaching at Santa Fe. But anyway, so I met Tommy and them through Stan, and then through Sadie Darnell as well. Tommy's first cousins, Sadie and Norma, the twins. And just, you know, I can't say I really knew him. I mean, who knew him besides his band and stuff and his family? But got to spend some time around him. Great guy.
So can you tell us any particular incidents or things that you remember?
Boy, that's a tough one, the remembering part. One time going to see him at the O'Connell Center, and right before the show, Sadie came out and said, Tommy would like to see you. And I'm like, well, Tommy who? You know, she says, Petty. You know, he wants to thank you for something I had done for him, I guess. So she took me back to the dressing room, and I had sent his wife, Janie at the time, a dozen roses. I was in the promotion business and radio, and when I knew the artist's wife was going to be at the show, I'd always make sure they had something in the dressing room. And he thought that was pretty cool. So he asked me to come by to backstage before the show to thank me. I thought that was really, really cool. Real humble guy. Real humble man.
Now, what's the story about the cement in the Walk of Fame?
Well, then years later, another promotion I put together, I thought it'd be really cool to do a Gainesville Walk of Fame because of Petty and the Heartbreakers and Bernie Ledden and Stephen Stills and Bo Diddley was still alive at the time, you know, and Don Felder. I figured we'd start with Petty, so we did this big event, and he agreed, his management, and so we had like 100 or so people at this hotel, and MTV was there filming it. It was really a big deal. But I didn't know how to do a cement slab. You know, I had called the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and they sent me a cease and desist letter to know you can't call it the Walk of Fame. So I didn't know how to do this recipe for cement. So the guy I hired, God bless him, but he wheels in this big thing of concrete. It's got rocks in it and stuff, you know.
That's not the same stuff.
No, it's not the same
Hollywood
stuff.
Hollywood Walk of Fame. No.
And Tommy puts his hands in it, and everybody's watching. The cameras are rolling, and he pulls his hands out, and the handprints fill back in with water, you know. And he says, well, what do I do now, Barry? I says, well, press it a little harder, you know, a little longer. He says, I'm going to kind of need these hands tonight, you know. And Stan Lynch is behind me going, well, this is going well, Barry, don't you think? You know, giving me a hard time. And anyway, we got through it, but it just didn't turn out very nice. It just did not turn out looking very nice. And I still have it. I've carried that thing around. You know, it weighs 300 pounds. It's 3 foot by 3 foot. But it's got Tommy's hands in it and his signature and Ben Mott and Mike and Stan and Howie, who was still alive at the time. And we're going to hope to place it somewhere where, amongst the wildflowers at some point. You know, we'll get it placed.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's their handprints, and that's what matters.
And I think people would really enjoy it setting somewhere, and I mean that amongst the wildflowers, or the park or whatever, to put their hands in his hands, you know, in his handprints. I think that's what people get out of it.
Well, you know, there's talk now of doing several different projects to honor and memorialize Tom Petty for all his contributions to music, and in particular, you know, being a Gainesville native.
And he waved that flag. He didn't ever say, I'm from Florida. He said, I'm from Gainesville, Florida. And he always did, always. He was very proud of that. He was very proud of his roots.
Yeah, and his songs talked about
Absolutely.
Gainesville. I mean, you know, he understood that Gainesville, Florida was different from the rest of Florida.
Yeah, yeah. And it is, still is.
Still is to this day. So anyhow, you know, I had the unique chance of actually working with Tom Petty and Tom Ledden when they were Mudcrutch when I first opened my law office. So I had done these Mudcrutch festivals with them, right? So they knew me, and all of a sudden I pass the Florida bar and I open up a law office. So they look at me and they go, oh, we want to step it up. We want to have a lawyer and, you know, have somebody, you know, do this. So they decide that they're going to, you know, work with me. And they come into the office. It was so funny. There'd be four of them that would come in, you know, Petty and Tommy Ledden and then Randy Marsh and Mike Campbell. That's all the band was at that time and before Ben Mott. So this was probably, I got my license in November of 71. So they called me the hippie attorney. Maybe it's because I had long hair down to my butt, you know, and I tied it back, you know. So this is a segment out of this great book, Music Everywhere by Marty Girard.
Can people get that book?
On Amazon. And Marty did a great job of writing this book. It came out last year, Music Everywhere, The Rock and Roll Roots of a Southern Town by Marty Girard. So, you know, he really...
And Marty was in the motels with his brother.
Yeah, and RGF, his brother was in RGF.
Which, from what I hear, stood for Real Good Friends.
Real Good Friends, right. Anyhow, Marty writes...
She goes for the button.
Marty writes in the book, in addition to helping produce the Mudcrutch festivals, Meldon had recently passed the Florida bar exams and was now practicing law. If you were busted for marijuana possession, Meldon was the attorney to call, the hippie lawyer. I got my license in November of 1971. At that point, Mudcrutch was still trying to get dates, play places. So I started working with Mudcrutch in my law office. They'd come in every week or so, and we'd talk about where they could play. I got them a gig at the Holiday Inn in Lake City, Florida, which they hated because they had to play cover songs, and that's the last thing they wanted to do. I was their booking agent for some gigs. and I was a lawyer. So they came to me for some advice. They had some young guy who was their roadie, but Tom Petty and Tom Ledden were the guys that I talked to. So I went down to Miami to meet with Albert T. Badgey, who's still a great friend of Barry's and mine, who was, at the time he was working for a big Florida promoter, Lease Campbell. I went with some Mudcrutch tapes to try to get them to hire Mudcrutch on some gigs. I almost had them on, but the agencies booking the lead acts always wanted their own opening acts for the headliners because they wanted to promote their new groups that were coming on. So we, after that, we worked together for a few more months, but my law practice was building, and Petty didn't want to play top 40. Okay. And he, you know, I knew they were going to have to go somewhere else to make it big. Okay. Because, you know, in Gainesville, you could play fraternities, you could play the Ratskeller, you could play outdoor, you know, on the Plaza of the Americas, you could play at Dubs, you could play at the Lamplighter, you could play, you know, a couple gigs. But to really develop your own music, and to become, to get to where Petty got, he had to move out west to L.A. So what do you think, Bear? We're going to do a wrap on the show.
Yeah, just, man, really a cloud of sorrow over this town all week. He will be missed but remembered. The family told me the other day that, you know, when most people pass, you have memories left to remember them by. But when Tommy passed, we've got records and records and records and records. He'll never go away.
Hey, on that, I think we're going to do a wrap on the show. And this is Jeffrey Meldon on Law Talk Live. And we'll see you next week, Saturday at 10:30. LSU is in town. So go Gators!